It's Friday, February 20th, 2009, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville. Produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C., this is your normal daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Welcome to the most popular podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, and Normal's staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about our show at our website, stash.normal.org. and continue the education and conversation on our blog as well. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. The podcasting and blogging technology for the Normal Daily Audio Stash is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. For your professional web design needs, visit redaphid.com. Good day, Stashers. Happy Friday and welcome to the podcast. Before we get to the hemp headlines, just wanted to update you on a few things that are coming up this weekend on our activist agenda calendar. Friday, Saturday, and Sunday this weekend, the Missouri Normal SSDP conference is taking place in Columbia, Missouri. Speakers include Alan St. Pierre, the executive director of Normal, Mason Tvert, the executive director of Safer, Dan Veets, a National Normal board member and the coordinator of Missouri Normal, Kelly Maddie from Joplin Normal, and Ryan Denham from Fayetteville Normal, all of whom have been guests on the Daily Audio Stash. Check out the calendar at stash.normal.org/agenda and just click on the title of the conference to get more information. Also coming up this weekend, there is a screening of Waiting to Inhale in New Hampshire and a meeting for Arizona Normal in Tucson. Again, check the calendar for more information. And this Saturday, Normal is also going to be announcing the winners in the $10,000 Pro Cannabis Ad Contest. Registered Stashers got a sneak peek at my favorites, and I'm proud to say that at least one of them may have been one of the top money winners. And at least one of them shocked me by not even winning an honorable mention. Now, what's it going to take to get these ads on TV? You. Your money. Donate now to get these ads on TV. Check the link that I've put up at stash.normal.org. We've researched the cost of placing these ads in numerous cable TV markets across the country, and some of these ad packages offer 30-second TV spots for as little as 8 cents per ad. So, collect your nickels and dimes, get your money together, donate 10 bucks, 20 bucks, 50 bucks, whatever you can afford, so that we can get these ads on the air so people can learn about the growing truth about cannabis. We believe that with 44% of the people now saying they support legalization of marijuana, 58% on the West and 48% on the East, all it's going to take is a little bit of advertising to bump those people that are on the fence about it over to our side. So donate today. Check out the links at stash.normal.org. We'll also have the link to the winners, which will be announced tomorrow morning, available on our front page. Now, looking through some of the media today, I wanted to make note of a couple of things that I came upon. One was video from Fox in L.A. This is Fox Channel 11. An interview with Craig X. Rubin from Temple 420, who's also running for mayor of Los Angeles. Check that out on the Stash. We've got the video up there for you as well. And if you're interested in supporting Craig's campaign for mayor, check out CraigX4Mayor.org. That's Craig X, the number 4, Mayor.org. And an opinion piece that I found on the San Francisco Gate has one of the best titles that I've read with regard to this economic crisis. It says, "Smoke this recession. It's simple. First we tax the booze, then we legalize the pot." It's a really good op-ed. Check it out. And even though this is San Francisco we're talking about here, more and more we're seeing these mainstream media newspapers printing these op-eds that say we ought to just tax and regulate marijuana. You can be a part of that Just send a letter to the editor, to your local newspaper, saying the same thing. The more this keeps reoccurring in print, the more people are going to believe that their belief in legalization isn't some crazy notion that nobody else thinks about. If you get your letters to the editor published in your local paper, send me notice about it at stash@normal.org, and we'll be glad to reprint it right up here on the blog. All right, we can all feel the growing wave of cannabis legalization spreading across this country. Grab your surfboard and hang 10, baby. It's time for your Normal Daily Audio Stash.
Hello, I'm Paul Stanford from the Hemp and Cannabis Foundation, or THCF. Medical marijuana is legal in 13 states today, and THCF has clinics in 8 of those states. Our doctors help qualified patients obtain an authorization for medical marijuana in their state. Patients are eligible for medical marijuana with a history of either severe chronic pain and or nausea, cancer, AIDS or HIV, hepatitis, glaucoma, seizure disorders like epilepsy, chronic muscle spasms such as in multiple sclerosis or asthma, neurodegenerative diseases such as Alzheimer's, and gastrointestinal disorders like IBS or Crohn's disease. If you or someone you know has one of these conditions, our doctors will help you obtain a permit for medical marijuana. THCF Medical Clinics has offices in Washington State, Oregon, California, Colorado, Hawaii, Nevada, Montana, and now Michigan. Call 1-800-723-0188 or go to the web at hemp.org or 1-800-723-0188.
Now it's time to take a look at the latest stories about marijuana from news organizations across America and around the world in our Normal Daily Audio Stash, Hemp Headlines. Congressman introduces bill criminalizing products designed to defraud drug tests. Washington, D.C. Congressman Elliot Engel, Democrat of New York, along with Representatives Peter DeFazio, Democrat of Oregon, Gene Schmidt, Republican of Ohio, and Lee Terry, Republican of Nebraska, has introduced legislation in Congress to criminalize the production and sale of any commercial products intended to influence drug test results, such as diuretic teas or chemical adulterants. The bill, H.R. 858, is now before the House Committee on Energy and Commerce. As introduced, the proposal would, quote, prohibit the manufacture, marketing, sale, or shipment in interstate commerce of products designed to produce a false or misleading outcome of a test for the presence of a controlled substance, end quote. More than a dozen states have enacted similar laws. Of the tens of millions of workplace drug tests performed annually in the United States, an estimated 90% are urine tests, which may be influenced by dilution or adding an adulterant to the sample. Over the past decade, numerous commercial businesses have marketed commercial products promising to influence drug test results, including herbal teas and substitute urine. Well, it's sad to see one of my own Oregon congressmen introducing this, and sadder still to see him teaming up with Mean Gene Schmidt of Ohio. But Oregon is one of the states with a similar law. This makes for brisk business across the state line in Vancouver, Washington, where a certain head shop owner advertises on late-night TV, "Hey, Portland, I've got what you're looking for." This sort of legislation won't have much effect, by the way. I don't know how you criminalize a diuretic tea. Even here in Oregon, we have health detoxifier products. Not meant to be used to flush your body of any detectable metabolites, no sir, but only for personal well-being, you see. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Oh, and Lawry's Adolph's Meat Tenderizer? That makes an excellent adulterant for carboxy-THC. Will your crusade rid us of tender, juicy beefsteak? Cranberry juice is another good way to flush your system. Are you going to put those two guys in the cranberry bog out of work, too? Well, then there's always your clean friend or relative willing to supply you with some pee. Will pee trading become criminalized? Just do the right thing and end workplace drug testing altogether. They're doing nothing to create a truly drug-free workplace.
According to the Federal Substance Abuse Mental Health Services Administration, 70% of illicit drug users age 18 to 49 are employed full-time.
So long as you have over-the-counter remedies in every receptionist desk, three martini lunches for the execs, and smoker shelters for the line, your workplace ain't drug-free anyway. These urine tests' primary accomplishment is identifying marijuana users, because the hard drug's metabolites are water-soluble and flush out of your system within a couple of days, but marijuana's metabolites are fat-soluble and stay in your system for days or weeks. Recent drug testing data compiled by Quest Diagnostics indicate that more than 60% of all positive workplace drug tests are for marijuana only, because urine tests detect a metabolized byproduct of marijuana and not the drug itself. Pot smokers may test positive days or even weeks after using it. By comparison, cocaine, the second most commonly detected drug, typically will wash out of the system within 48 hours. So, this weekend's pot smoker will be out of a job if you test him next Friday, but this weekend's crack smoker will pee clean by Tuesday. The only thing you accomplish with a pre-employment drug metabolite test is finding a pot smoker who can quit for a couple of weeks or beat your urine screen. A 1994 study by the National Academy of Sciences concluded, quote, "Despite beliefs to the contrary, there exists no evidence from properly controlled studies that employment drug testing programs widely discourage drug use or encourage rehabilitation," end quote. Trust me on this one. Once that negative P test is revealed and the job offer is signed, we're blazing one up that night in celebration. Marijuana users are safer, more responsible, better educated, more productive, more loyal employees than the ones who drink. Trust me, we don't call in sick with hangovers. And many small firms got my skills at a bargain simply because they respected my privacy. In addition, a 1998 study by the Lemoyne College Institute of Industrial Relations of 63 high-tech firms found that pre-employment and random drug screening procedures resulted in a significant loss of worker productivity and appeared to create, quote, a negative work environment, end quote, for employees. There are some jobs I had when I was younger, like field work, dishwashing, and burger flipper, where I think productivity would increase if the workforce could take toke breaks. Sometimes it may be the only way to summon enough dignity to put on the paper hat and name tag. Oregon reports lowest rates of workplace illness and injury ever recorded. According to the latest Oregon Occupational Injury and Illness Survey, quote, Oregon workers employed in the private sector during calendar year 2007 suffered work-related injuries and illnesses at a rate of 5.1 for every 100 full-time employees, the lowest ever recorded, end quote. This new achievement in workplace safety is achieved in the same year as the 10th anniversary of the Oregon Medical Marijuana Program surpassing 20,000 registry identification cardholders. Opponents of medical marijuana patients in the workplace claim that these employees may create a safety issue in the workplace. However, statistics gathered from Oregon's Occupational Health and Safety Administration show that over the past decade, as enrollment in the medical marijuana program has grown to over 20,000 patients, the rates of workplace fatalities, injuries, and illness have all declined to the lowest levels ever recorded. Oregon Normal is leading the battle to protect Oregonians' medical marijuana and workplace rights. Nobody should be forced to choose between their job and their health care. And no employer should come between a doctor and a patient. Learn about the bills proposed in the legislature that threaten Oregonians' medical marijuana patients' workplace rights at ornorml.org. Anxiety in Massachusetts over softer marijuana law. Massachusetts voters made history by approving a sweeping marijuana decriminalization law on Election Day, but campaign debates are reigniting as communities start to enforce the new rule. A large margin of victory for the ballot initiative, 65% of the voters approved the law, is already inspiring similar legislative efforts in other New England states, prompting close attention nationwide to the effects of a less stringent marijuana law. Massachusetts is not the first state to decriminalize marijuana possession. 12 others have done so. but it is the first since the 1970s to eliminate criminal penalties for possession of small amounts of the drug, even for repeat offenders. One major concern of some police officials, while marijuana remains an illegal substance, full decriminalization, as is the case in Massachusetts, removes officers' powers of arrest, which means police can't compel offenders to identify themselves. Says Terrence Reardon, chief of police in Revere, a city of 55,000, quote, "If someone is sitting on the front steps of City Hall smoking a bone, you can't do much if they tell you they're Donald Duck," end quote. Such complaints are overstated, say decriminalization advocates. Bruce Merkin from Marijuana Policy Project says, quote, "People have tried to claim that the identification issue is a loose end, but in fact, it's no different than every other civil citation in Massachusetts, like jaywalking or, in some communities, drinking in public. Miraculously, it's a problem with marijuana," end quote. The new Massachusetts law specifically allows communities to draft their own public consumption ordinances, and dozens are considering doing so. The state attorney general's office prepared a model bylaw that would levy an additional $300 fine, the state maximum, on people caught using pot in public. The last time one of these officials brought up the Donald Duck defense, I noted a Supreme Court case called Hibble v. Nevada that I think ruins that argument. According to a 2004 CNN report, the Supreme Court has given police greater power to stop and question suspects, ruling Monday that a Nevada cowboy could not refuse to give his name to officers who tried to question him along a roadside. He was arrested after he told a deputy that he didn't have to reveal his name or show an ID during an encounter on a rural road in 2000. Hibble was prosecuted based on his silence and fined $250. The Nevada Supreme Court sided with police on a 4-3 vote. In its ruling announced Monday, the justices upheld Hibble's misdemeanor conviction. Writing for the majority, Justice Anthony Kennedy said, quote, "Asking questions is an essential part of police investigation. In the ordinary sense, a police officer is free to ask a person for identification without implicating the Fourth Amendment," end quote. According to an AP report, justices were told that 20 states have similar laws to the Nevada statute upheld by the High Court, including Massachusetts. Here at Normal, we forwarded this on to some Massachusetts attorneys who told us they couldn't find case law that said citizens must show ID, nor could they find any case law that police may require ID. I don't know what law the AP report was referring to, but based on Justice Kennedy writing that a police officer is free to ask a person for identification, I think that police have some power to compel that identification. Otherwise, as Bruce Merkin notes, how would parking tickets or jaywalking tickets ever work? When I get a better answer to the question, do I have to show ID to the police when given a civil infraction? I'll post it.
Marijuana is an addictive drug, which produces in its users insanity, criminality, and death.
Marijuana is the most violence-causing drug in the history of mankind.
If the hideous monster Frankenstein came face to face with the monster of marijuana, he would drop dead from fright.
UN agency recommends world stop trivializing marijuana dangers. Vienna, Austria.
A UN drugs agency warned Thursday against underestimating the dangers of cannabis. The International Narcotics Board wrote in its annual report, quote, "The international community may wish to review the issue of cannabis. Over the years, cannabis has become more potent and is associated with an increasing number of emergency room admissions," end quote.
Oh, a swing and a miss. Cannabis has become more potent, but increasing potency does not mean increasing danger, as marijuana smoking is a self-titrating action. If you have schwag, you smoke a lot of it and get high. If you have kind, you smoke a little of it and get high. As for the emergency room admissions, this myth is taken from the Dawn statistics, where they determine if someone has used cannabis prior to admittance, not whether the cannabis caused the admittance. Since cannabis is the most popular illicit drug, it is naturally going to be mentioned more often in the ER.
Cannabis was often the first illicit drug taken by young people and was frequently called a gateway drug, in that it could lead to later use of hard drugs.
Strike two. In 1999, U.S. Institute of Medicine shot down the gateway theory, and many studies that followed found the same thing. Nowadays, no serious scientist even brings it up anymore, but that doesn't stop cannabophobic bureaucrats from saying it anyway.
Indeed, many countries allowed the recreational use of cannabis, and public perceptions of the so-called medical uses of the drug and its recreational use are overlapping and confusing, it said.
Oh, I think that's a foul tip. There's nothing so-called about the medical uses of cannabis, and if its medical use is overlapping and confusing, then why did teen marijuana use rates decline in the states that implemented medical marijuana?
It also urged governments to stimulate the controlled use of opiate-based painkillers to help, quote, alleviate unnecessary suffering of millions of patients. Although the access to controlled medicines, including morphine and codeine, is considered by the World Health Organization to be a human right, it is virtually non-existent in over 150 countries. The World Health Organization estimates that at least 30 million patients, and possibly as many as 86 million annually, suffer from untreated moderate to severe pain. End quote.
You're out! In fact, not only are you out, but your whole team is out, disqualified, and banished from the league. In the same set of recommendations where you demonize cannabis and its so-called medical uses, you then remind us access to painkillers is a human right, millions are suffering with undertreated pain, and you recommend we stimulate more use of opiates? Who writes your recommendation? The Opium Poppy Growers Union?
Georgia. Hi, this is Willie Nelson, and I need your help. Alcohol prohibition didn't work in the 20s, and marijuana prohibition isn't working today. It's time we stop arresting law-abiding citizens because they prefer marijuana over alcohol. Nearly 2,000 Americans are arrested every day on marijuana charges. We're unfairly destroying the lives and careers of hundreds of thousands of people each year simply because they smoke marijuana. These are not criminals. They're average citizens like you, good neighbors who work hard, raise families, pay taxes, and contribute to their communities. We need your help to end marijuana prohibition once and for all. It's the fair thing to do.
For more information, contact NORML, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. Call toll-free 888-67-NORML or visit their website at norml.org.
Marijuana culture is infused throughout America and the world. As we round out the week, we take a look at the 420 phenomenon in movies, TV, music, and sports with former High Times editor and author of Pot Culture, Steve Bloom, in our CelebStoner.com entertainment news. Means we got to check up on what the celebrities are doing in respect to marijuana. And of course, joining us every Friday is Steve Bloom from CelebStoner.com to give us the rundown from the celebrity cannabis entertainment world. And welcome back, Steve.
Hey there, Russ. How are you?
I'm doing great. And you know, the past couple of weeks, I know my website's been just hopping over the Michael Phelps thing. I'm sure yours has too. We kind of wrapped up Michael Phelps this week. Let's give everyone the latest info.
Yeah, the sheriff down there, Leon Lott, he determined that there wasn't a case to be made around Michael Phelps' bong-hitting activities in Columbia, South Carolina. That had received a lot of publicity. It seemed like a real grandstand move on the part of the sheriff to go after Phelps. You know, they had really no evidence. And it turns out, you know, Phelps never really said that he had smoked marijuana, so that even reduced the level of evidence. And, you know, they went around and arrested some people down there the week before. Seven people were arrested. And none of them were arrested for being at the particular party, but they were kind of associated with it because they were either people who lived in the house where the party was or lived in another house where another party was taking place where some of the people had lived at either or house. So those cases probably will be, well, those were just simple marijuana possessions that had nothing to do with Phelps. Perhaps those will be dropped, but that's ongoing. But as far as Phelps is concerned, he's off the hook. So he doesn't have to really worry anymore about that. And I think essentially, you know, by the sheriff making this statement this week, it kind of took the air out of the story. If he had continued this investigation, there would have been more and more discussion as to whether it was right or wrong, whether the, you know, whether police should be going after him, whether there should be any type of investigation whatsoever. And now that that's over, it's pretty much done with. There hasn't really been any more focus on the sponsors or endorsers. You know, everything has pretty much been said. You know, nobody else has kind of weighed in. I mean, there's a couple of comments around the web from different celebrities still, you know, weighing in on Phelps. But by and large, the story's over. But it was a hell of a story. And, you know, it really kept Celeb Stoner quite busy for 2 weeks. And I'm sure, of course, you know, the stash and all the other marijuana sites on the web, it was kind of a boom. And it was a good boom because, you know, obviously it brought traffic to our sites, but it also opened the door to a big discussion about athletes and marijuana, about celebrities and marijuana, about marijuana in general in the United States and around the world. And you know, it really it created a forum for, you know, a lot of discussions. And I think it just, you know, leads us in the right direction this year with Obama being the president and him being a little bit loose on this issue, we hope. And with someone like Phelps, you know, being in the news and other things happening, it can only lead us in the right direction.
Oh, I agree. And I watched a lot of the, like, late night comedy shows. They made a lot of jokes about Phelps, of course. And it seemed like every time the conversation came around, you know, whatever celebrity they were interviewing on Leno's couch or Letterman's desk there or whatever, most everyone's reaction seemed to be, you know, the guy won 14 gold medals. It seems like he's doing just fine with his life. Leave him alone. You know, Joe Rogan from UFC, you know, made some comments, similar comments. So I think you're right. I think most people weighed in on our side of this, if anything.
Pretty much so. I think so. I mean, the only people who didn't, you know, were people who, you know, we don't really want to have much to do with anyway. Really don't even have to worry about it at this point. I think they're marginalized.
Yeah. Now, another continuing story that we follow with Celeb Stoner is you guys trying to put together the 11-man squad for the All-NFL Drug Bust team, and we almost made it this week. Just almost.
Pretty close. Marshawn Lynch, all-pro runner for the Buffalo Bills. He's had 2,000 run seasons for his first two seasons in the NFL. He was stopped in California last week on a gun charge. He was in a car in Culver City. Actually, that's where Snoop Dogg was arrested. He should have known better. Snoop Dogg was arrested twice in Culver City. He was sitting in a car, Mercedes, idling. Police came by, found something questionable about his license plate, and, you know, next thing you know, the same old scenario. Rolled down the window, smoke comes out, or the smell of marijuana comes out. The search begins. They found a gun, which he was charged for, carrying a concealed weapon. However, they couldn't really place who was smoking the pot and who had owned it, so they didn't charge anybody, although they may come back with charges. So technically speaking, Marshawn Lynch was not arrested for marijuana, and he kind of like he is on the list because it's because it was brought up as such, but we'll see whether he's actually charged. So he does make it 11 players now who have been associated with marijuana, you know, as far as the police were concerned in some scenario, you know, where they got in trouble. Actually, there have been three now this year, so it's quite a few before the Super Bowl. There have been three players, Leroy Hill, Roderick Green, and now Lynch, all within a three-week period, all either were involved with a marijuana situation. The other two guys were arrested, and Lynch wasn't. So, you know, last year there were a total of eight, and now there's already a total of three, and we're only 2 months into the year. So we'll see what happens, but the list keeps growing.
Yeah, you might get both an offensive and a defensive squad by the time this year's done.
It looks like it. Actually, some very good players. You know, as everybody knows, Santonio Holmes, the MVP of the Super Bowl, was arrested for marijuana in October. as another example, like Phelps, of, you know, athletes doing well despite, you know, smoking marijuana.
Yeah, and at least Lynch was smart enough not to put the concealed weapon in the sweatband pants, right?
That's right, he didn't shoot himself.
The sweatband of his sweats there. Okay, and one other story here from going to the movies. You know, they just re-released a remake of one of my favorite movies from my childhood, Friday the 13th. I don't think of it as a childhood movie, I guess. But anyway, is there some discussion now as to whether Jason is a stoner?
Well, trying to encourage it on the website, the movie has a distinctly marijuana sort of flavor. The first group of people who go to this campground, the original Crystal Lake campground, spook campground where the original deaths occurred, they, of course, don't know about it. They go there, and they're looking for a marijuana patch.
Uh-huh.
That's kind of what they heard. There's a marijuana patch here. Let's go find it. Let's grab it and run. So, well, this whole group doesn't even – they step into the patch, a couple of them, but next thing you know, they're getting killed. I mean, you know, you get killed pretty quickly in these movies.
Yeah.
You don't have much time to think. Next thing you know, Jason's standing behind you, you know, with a with a crossbow or something.
Especially if you're an attractive...
He knocks them off pretty fast. So then what happens there is that after the first group get killed, the brother of one of the girls who got supposedly killed, at least they haven't found any of the people who were killed, he goes to search it out. So he starts his own investigation. Meanwhile, another group of people, young people, go to have a party in the same area. And they're not there looking for the marijuana. They're just kind of like partiers. You know, there's some joints and bongs and stuff like that. So it would, you know, made me wonder, though, when watching this movie, and some other, you know, people have actually asked this question. Some reviewers have asked the question, you know, is Jason a stoner? Because, you know, what's going on here? Why is the marijuana there in the movie? What's the point? Now, is this his plot? There's a guy, and I don't know who the character's name was, who's sort of a redneck grower. And so at one point, you know, when they're searching around to try and find, you know, the lost people, they stumble upon this guy, you know, who has, you know, who tries to sell him weed. Next thing you know, he gets killed. So, you know, everybody that has anything to do with marijuana in this movie gets killed. So does that mean that Jason is protecting his pot plants?
I don't know. You know,
who
it reminds me
pot
of...
plants? Who's growing that fake plastic pot that they show you in the movie? You know, there's a couple of scenes where the kids, you know, running, they're looking around, and, oh, my God, there it is. And they go nuts. They see it, you know, and obviously, you know, I guess that's just the way they do it in Hollywood, is that they're not going to show you real pot plants. But nevertheless, they're representing marijuana, and there they are. So, you know, hasn't really been a lot of discussion. I tried to promote this on the site, but nobody really responded. So either people haven't seen the movie, or, you know, it just kind of went over people's heads a little bit. But there's definitely marijuana in the movie. And so there's sort of a stoner theme running through the movie. And obviously, you know, pretty much everybody gets hacked up. And anybody who has anything to do with marijuana in the movie gets hacked up. The people who survive are not the stoners in the movie, although kind of everybody loosely could be considered a stoner. But the ones who do any degree of smoking, or the ones who are out there searching for the weed, or that grower guy, they're all, you know, they don't make it. So the stoners don't fare very well in Friday the 13th. And actually, going back to the original, I saw Kevin Bacon on one of the late night shows this week, and they were reminiscing about the original Friday the 13th, which he was in. And actually, it turns out, he gets killed while he's smoking a joint. So, I don't know. They don't like pot in those movies.
I guess
not. Or at least they want to use that as a way to kind of... I mean, I don't want to take it as like that super negative, that it's like anti-drug movie because you smoke pot, you get killed. But nevertheless, it's part of the storyline. And, you know, it just kind of raised the question, is Jason a stoner?
Yeah.
Which is not a good thing. I mean, the guy's a stoner going out and killing people. So we don't really want him on our side.
No.
But again, it's just kind of... curious.
Yeah.
So what's it doing in the movie? Is it there just because pot is hot and they want to build it in and they'll get the young audience interested? Maybe it's just there for no other reason than that, but it seems like there could be a deeper reason or a deeper message, you know, running through this movie.
Well, you know, when I look at all these horror movies that are aimed at the younger generation, it seems like there's always, you know, in the past it was always whoever was doing it, right? You know, whenever the pretty co-ed and the football star would start doing it.
Well, you gotta have fun, right?
Yeah, as soon as they start doing it, that's when they get killed. It was kind of, you know, just say no, don't have sex kind of a message. I wonder if that's, you know, what they're trying to do with this is, you know.
I mean, I don't think so, because you just don't feel like that way. That's how it comes out. But still, you know, there is, you know, it's not a good time for stoners in these movies. you're just not going to come out of it happy.
Well, if you ask me, they should have shut down that camp long ago.
You don't get the payoff. They never, you know, grab the buds and smoke it up, run away with. That would be kind of fun. At least if they like grab them and then they got chased. You know, that doesn't really happen. Everything happens so quickly in these movies. I mean, they just, you know, how I kind of look at him as kind of like a Darth Vader. You know, he just. You know, he's just there, and he's got his reasons why he's going to kill everybody. and it's unclear. It's like, say, he's a psychopath, obviously, due to the fact that, you know, he lost his mother when he was younger and saw the death and so on and so forth and comes back to kill everybody. But, you know, I'm just wondering, you know, is there a little bit more than meets the eye?
Yeah. Well, we'll have more people go out and see the movie, and they can ring in on it, and we'll have a discussion about it. I think it's something worth talking about, especially as we see more and more references to marijuana in mainstream movies like this. We got to kind of figure out what they're trying to say. And I think this one, I don't know. I think it's not so much anti-marijuana as it's just, you know, kids and marijuana kind of go together these days as far as, you know, young people. So maybe it's just a sign of the times. I don't know.
It just built into the plot. Yeah.
Well, Steve, thanks again for joining us here on our Friday Celebrity Entertainment Report with CelebStoner.com. Want to have everyone go out there to the website, CelebStoner.com. Ring in on that discussion about Friday the 13th and all the other celebrities out there that are involved with cannabis. Thanks a lot, Steve.
A couple of other things. You know, tonight is the next season for Real Time.
That's right.
I recommend people, you know. Bill always talks about marijuana. And I also have another tip. A show on Sunday, the Oscars are Sunday, but the College Humor show, which I think is great, just kicked off on MTV, and I recommend that as well.
All right. We'll put those on the calendar, too, so people don't forget.
All right.
Thanks, Steve.
Take care, Russ.
Just say no.
No matter what you call it, it's a huge part of popular culture.
Where'd you learn that, Cheech? Drug school.
You don't need weed school. You just need a copy of the new book, Pot Culture, the A to Z Guide to Stoner Language and Life.
Hey, this is great, man.
Even if you never smoked marijuana.
I never used marijuana. Sorry.
Don't think you smoked marijuana.
I experimented with marijuana a time or two and didn't inhale.
Or you used to smoke marijuana.
I inhaled frequently. That was the point.
Pot Culture by former High Times editor Steve Bloom and Shirley Halperin will answer every question you ever had about marijuana culture.
Has that marijuana made it back up here yet?
Check out Pot Culture, the A to Z Guide to Stoner Language and Life at Amazon.com or visit PotCultureBook.com today.
Too bad, man. I just stopped smoking yesterday.
The battle to end adult marijuana prohibition can sometimes seem endlessly frustrating and impossible to overcome. One way we bond as a community and draw strength to continue is by rejuvenating our spirit through art and music. The Marijuana Music Awards exist to recognize those sonic artists in all genres of music who feature a ganja-friendly message to motivate and inspire all the cannabis community. Our Daily Toker Tunes, brought to you by MarijuanaMusicAwards.com, feature the finest in blues, rock, jazz, hip-hop, rap, reggae, country, bluegrass, and dance music to enhance that 420 feeling and refresh all you stashers for another day on the front lines of the drug war. Enjoy this cut from MarijuanaMusicAwards.com and visit our blog at stash.normal.org to learn how you can vote for your favorites and enter your Toker Tunes in the 2009 Marijuana Music Awards. We began last week with the fantastic group The Individuals, and we closed this week with their great song, High Daily, winner of the 2008 Global Marijuana Music Awards Best Rap Song. The Individuals call their music gangsta hip-hop. A mix of gangsta rap and hip-hop, the group excel in both musical genres. Their classic CDs, Something to Smoke To and Something to Smoke To Too, are for the millions of marijuana smokers around the world. If you love weed, you'll love the Individuals. Their music was created for stoners to sit back and smoke a joint, blunt, or vaporizer. The group's CDs have some serious tracks which are ideal for puff-puff passing around the world. These extra-talented masters of the microphone have 11 Marijuana Music Awards to their name, including Album of the Year, Best Reggae, Best Rap, Best Music Video, and Best Blues Song. Find out more about the Individuals at myspace.com/theindividuals420. Here's the Individuals' fantastic song, which I'm sure we can all relate to, High Daily.
I'm Eddie Lapp. I'm with Eddie's Majestical Gardens in Upper Lake, California, and I get high daily.
This is Rich Marley from the U.S. Marijuana Party down here in Parkville, Illinois, and I get high daily.
Check it out. This is Rich from the South Side of Chicago. I'm taking an interview with Mike and High Daily.
This is Pete Burrell from the West Side.
On the real, what they're talking about, I gotta smoke every day, and my love, they deserve the best. Therefore, I'm getting what they need, and you know what the beat that gets sets in my chest. And I just love it when I'm coughing and choking chest. Be burning, my eyes get watery, and then my face start jerking. That mean that Esther is working, she just doing her job. I'm just maintaining, no more straining, not the what's in this job. Just take a couple of hits, homie, you be seeing the stars. Cause this that real shit, this here be more than 16 bars. Now what's the odds of a nigga like you be blowing like me? Not one in a million, one in a trillion, dog, I just can't see. Don't stop your woofing, homie, cause I'ma get high daily. And watch what the fuck you say to me, and don't you try to play me, nigga. I'ma get high daily, 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 I'ma get high daily. I'm waking up with it,
under my pillows, happy or miserable, I'm addicted to smoking endo, rolling them cigarillos, got me on cloud 10-0, Patron mixed with that Henno, that's how I do it daily, grown man tolerance, you can't hang, you a baby, I'm about that business, don't you ever, ever play me, I got that smell on me, you just tell if I got that kill on me, yeah homie, the smoke flowing off in the air homie, I'm in my lair, growing that good, it's slime time, my hood is all mine, they calling me prime time, they loving my 5 pound. Soon as I ride down, they run up on me like, what you working with, dubs and dimes? I'm smoking till I'm high, that takes a long time. I'm telling you, I be talking to the dark from the early light. 365, any given day of the week, I'ma need my medicine, take my prescription, let me hit my weed.
I'ma get high daily, 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 I'ma get high daily.
Stay high in the city, get a shot. Live where I'm from, so I come and I lie. Wanna be with it, but I'ma show that shit. Never lose when you pop, but I lose that grip. Break the thing, so I'ma show you what's up. Blaze it up, so I'ma tote that butt. Nigga can get it, so I'ma show you why I'm with it. Nigga like me, never slip, what's up. Break them off, so I'ma show that a thing. Up in the bus, and I'ma show that it main. Feel it for golf, but never be stalled. So I'ma show a nigga that I pop, so I move that thing. Fuck the shit, a nigga rock the shit. So I'ma show a nigga that I run a dive the clip. But you can fit in the shit, but who you fucking with? A motherfucker by the name of Raw Beat, bitch. Breaking them up, a nigga fucking them up. A nigga's learning that the same old thing. Up in the bus, a nigga still won't lose, cause a nigga still caught off in the game, but the same, I get high daily. And if you wanna come get it, so I break them all. Cause if I can get the ball, so it's time to brawl. Cock, block, motherfucker, so it fuck them all.
I'ma get high daily. 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 I'ma get high daily.
I'm Alan St. Pierre, Executive Director of Normal. Have you heard about the new super pot that's supposedly 20 times more potent than your father's Woodstock weed? Don't believe the hype. Marijuana's THC potency has always varied, even in the 60s and 70s. And the drug czar's numbers are full of, well, exaggerations. While no intoxicant is harmless, cannabis is non-toxic and far safer than alcohol. No matter how much you smoke, of whatever potency, you cannot die of a marijuana overdose. Potency is irrelevant anyway. More potent pot just means you smoke less of it. meaning less harmful smoke in your lungs. This is a prime example of harm reduction in action. Besides, the government already allows the prescription of THC pills. Its commercial brand name is Marinol, and it's 100% potent. Meanwhile, the federal government won't allow dying people to use natural marijuana, no matter what the potency. Does this make sense to you? Learn the facts about pot. Visit norml.org today.
Here at the Normal Daily Audio Stash, we've covered a lot of the trials and tribulations of the people who are just trying to provide medical marijuana to the sick and disabled and sense-threatened people who are legally able to use it in one of the now 13 states that recognize the medical use of marijuana. Of course, the epicenter of all of this medical marijuana activity is the state of California, and of course, that's where we're going to find all of the groundbreaking cases and the probably the most busts, too, when we start looking at the DEA's involvement. And that leads me to our guest today is author Vanessa Nelson, and she has written a new book called Cool Madness, The Trial of Dr. Molly Fry and Dale Schaefer. And we've covered their trial here on the Stash, but this book gets into incredible detail about that trial. And so, Vanessa, thank you so much for joining us here on the show.
Thanks, Russ. It's great to be here.
Let's fill in the details, fill in the background here for people that may be new to the show or new to the movement and don't know who Dr. Fry and Dale Schaefer are. Give a little background on what they were doing and what happened to them leading up to this trial.
Okay. Dr. Fry is a physician, and her husband, Dale Schaefer, is an attorney. And what happened was, in the late 1990s, Dr. Fry got breast cancer, a very aggressive form of breast cancer, and she ended up having a double mastectomy, and she started using medical marijuana herself under her doctor's recommendation at that point, and it worked very well for her. She says it saved her life. She only had a 30% survival rate at that time, so it's quite believable that it had something to do with saving her life. And what happened was she had trouble getting a hold of marijuana, and her husband, Dale Schaefer, testified to trying to get it on the black market, and he had a lot of trouble getting it there.
Sure.
And he essentially taught himself to grow marijuana for her and eventually for himself. He's also he's a hemophiliac, and he has a very rare form of hemophilia, and he's the oldest survivor of that particular type, and he has back injuries too. So we're talking about two very sick people, and they started cultivating marijuana there on their property. He was growing it for her and then for himself, and then they had an AIDS patient that he was caregiving for, and also another person who was living at their house with them. They're very charitable people. They would take in people who are having a hard time, friends of friends, and in addition to their own five children. And then once this was really working for them, Dr. Fry started actually setting up a practice, and it's in the town of Cool, California, which is the title of the book, where
right.
it comes from. And that's a rural town up in the foothills where gold was discovered back in the 1800s, leading to the California Gold Rush. And she set up this practice, and she began issuing medical marijuana recommendations. And Dale Schaefer, who, as I said, is an attorney, he set up a connected office that advised people about medical marijuana law. So the patients who would come into her office would also get a legal consultation from him. And at that time, he was also keeping up a small garden for them and the few patients that they were caregiving for. And we're talking about a couple dozen plants a year.
Right. And what's the limit there as far as California law goes? Where does California law say they need to keep their plant limits at?
Well, it's an interesting thing because it's complicated and it's not really settled at this point.
Oh.
They had been going with at least 6 plants that were mature and 12 plants that were immature per patient, and mm-hmm. that was set forth in a Senate bill, SB 420.
And that's pretty reasonable compared to when we look at the gardens that are grown in other medical marijuana states as well. Some states have higher limits, some have less, but we're not talking about, you know, massive sea of green, thousands of plants here.
Right. No, not at all. And the thing with that was, that was just the minimum that
right.
a county had to approve. Each county would set its own rules, and they couldn't go under those numbers, but they could say, oh, you can have up to whatever it was. Some counties would go up to 99. But that has since been called unconstitutional by an appellate court. It's now being decided by the Supreme Court. So we'll see where that goes. The idea there was that it was unconstitutional to amend and put limits on a voter-approved initiative in something that went through the legislature. So we're going to see how that turns out. At this point, it's all kind of in limbo. But that's what they were going with.
And California, none of the local authorities had any problems with their gardens or their dispensing or advice or anything.
Right. Well, that's where we kind of get into a problem. What happened with them was at some point in 1999, they suspected that there was some surveillance being done on their property by law enforcement. So since they believed they were legal and, as it seems, under state law they were, they called up the sheriff and they said, okay, here's what we're doing. It's medical marijuana. If you want to know any more, come over. We'll show it to you, talk to you. And so some sheriff's detectives came out that year and they did what they called a compliance check to verify that they were complying with state law. And they counted the plants and they made a report. They had a friendly visit there. And they concluded that the grow was in compliance. And there were 20-some plants there in 1999. They came back the next year in 2000, and there were growing 40-some plants. And, you know, as far as anyone could tell, everything was fine. No one was charged. They were told they were in compliance by the local cops. But then what happened was Dr. Friandale Schaefer got onto the radar of the DEA. Mm. And when the DEA started doing an investigation, they ended up raiding them in 2001 and only coming up with 34 plants. And this was not anything substantial to charge them with. You need to get up to 100 plants until you can trigger a 5-year mandatory minimum, which is what the federal prosecutors always want to go for.
So let's be clear. Any amount of plants is illegal under federal law, but really the feds don't want to waste their time until it gets to about 100.
Exactly.
Okay.
It's true that they could charge anyone
right.
For any amount. However, they say that they don't if it's under 100 plants, and it really wouldn't be worth it to them because if it's less than 100 plants, the judge can let them off if he wants to. If it's
right.
over 100 plants, he's bound by the 5-year mandatory minimum, so it's kind of like, you know, it's insurance. They can be sure to get some jail time out of you
sure.
if they prosecute you for that. So what they did was, they got the information from the locals, the federal prosecutors did. So they were using these compliance checks. And since there's a 5-year statute of limitations
uh-huh.
on cultivation, they could add these 3 different years together.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wait,
they came
so
up with 110 plants is what the total ended up being.
So if a person grows, you know, 30 plants in one harvest, 30 plants the next year, 30 plants the next year, and 30 plants the next year, over a 4-year span, they've grown 120 plants, and that triggers the mandatory minimum.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
And a lot of people don't know that. They think that if they stay under 100 plants for each grow, then they're, you know, somewhat safe, as we talked about. Yeah.
So really, you'd want to be growing 20 or less plants per year.
Yeah.
Wow.
Right.
Has this type of tactic been used on other medical marijuana providers in federal trials?
I have not seen it before, and I've heard that this was the first time. Mm. I mean, it's hard to know what has happened because there's not a lot of reporting, but I've heard, and, you know, I haven't seen it being used anywhere else. I do believe this is the first time it was used in a federal trial.
And, you know, the unintended consequence of this would be if someone was in California trying to maintain a legal garden, they wouldn't want to have any compliance checks. You don't want to have any of that paperwork that would prove how many plants you've grown every year. And that just, you know, leads to more chaos and less adherence to the law, I would think.
Right. It's a very difficult situation. A lot of people, like Dr. Friandale Schaefer, thought they were in compliance, thought they could be out, you know, in the open and work with local law enforcement. And they didn't anticipate this, and no one really did.
What is the what has been the effect now on since this trial? They've been convicted, I understand. What's happening with Dr. Fry and Dale Schaefer now?
They were convicted, and that did trigger the 5-year mandatory minimum, and they were sentenced last spring. They got 5 years.
Yeah.
The judge said, well, it's the mandatory minimum. I've got to give it to you. But the somewhat happy ending to this story is that they were allowed to stay out of custody. They did not have to go to prison. They are allowed to stay out on appeal. And that was because they're first-time offenders. They also have very life-threatening illnesses, and they have a compelling appellate issue once they get their case going, and they're going to file their appeal, as I understand, next month. They're also going to be working on filing a pardon petition, so see how that goes. And essentially what they're saying in their appeal is this concept of sentencing entrapment, is that they, you know, were allowed to keep growing even after the police, you know, did their compliance check, and they would not have built up to over 100 plants unless they were encouraged by law enforcement to keep going because they were in compliance. And so I guess we'll hope that goes well in the appeal. That'll be in the Ninth Circuit Court sometime this year.
Well, before we wrap things up here, Vanessa, in writing this book and covering this trial, and I'm looking through the chapters here, and it looks like you've got, you know, a chapter for just about everybody's statements and every witness that was interviewed and so on. What was it that you found most shocking or surprising about getting into the sausage factory that is our judicial system here?
There were some moments that were completely bizarre where the prosecution would pull up things that you just wouldn't even think of, and was permitted to ask these questions. There was one completely bizarre moment that sticks in my head where Dr. Fry had been doing radio advertisements for her practice, and when Dale Schaefer was on the stand testifying, the prosecutor cross-examined him by throwing these accusations at him. You know, did you know that your wife advertised on a radio station that played a song called Because I Got High? Of course, his response is, well, I don't know if you say so. And she did that several times with several different artists, several different songs, and it seemed completely irrelevant. And yet, she did it in such an accusatory way that, you know, if one wasn't listening to the meaning of the words, one would think, like, oh, wow, she's got him.
Yeah. Yeah. But played on the same radio station that plays Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds. Oh, shock and horrors. Well, that's an amazing story. And the book is out now. It's called Cool Madness, The Trial of Dr. Molly Fry and Dale Schaefer. It's by Vanessa Nelson. We'll have it, links to it up on our blog at stash.normal.org. Looks like also you can get it through MMA Publishing at mmapub.com. Are there any other outlets that people could get the book?
It's going to be available at some other outlets. For right now, that's the one. Yeah, and they can also read other reports I've done on other court cases at medicalmarijuanaofamerica.com. And also, a third of the profits from this book will go to Dr. Fry and Dale Schaefer's legal defense fund, which they will need for their appeal.
Absolutely. It's an entertaining read. And again, if a third of it is going to help them with their appeals, these could be some precedent setting appeals that we're talking about here. So get your copy of Cool Madness, The Trial of Dr. Molly Fry and Dale Schaefer. And Vanessa Nelson, thank you so much for doing this reporting and telling us all about it here on the show.
Thank you, Russ, and keep up the good work yourself.
Thank you. Thank you for downloading the Normal Daily Audio Stash, The Growing Truth About Cannabis. We are produced by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. Our executive producer is Alan St. Pierre. Our deputy director is Paul Armentano. Our webmaster is Brian Judy. And web production is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. As always, you can catch up on the latest information about marijuana at www.normal.org. And you can interact and download from our Audio Stash blog at stash.normal.org. For everyone here at Normal, I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, hoping all your harvests are bountiful and your encounters with law enforcement are non-existent. We leave you today with another reminder to check back on Saturday on the Stash for the winners of the $10,000 Pro Cannabis Ad Contest. And we leave you with another one of our cannabis quotes. This one from the United States Constitution's Fourth Amendment, reminding you that, quote, the right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrants shall issue but upon probable cause, supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized, end quote. Now, somebody convince me how men that wrote that kind of language could be convinced to pee in a cup to get a job. I doubt it. Thanks for downloading the podcast and every week helping us to set new records in listenership and readership at stash.normal.org. Have yourself a great weekend. We'll be here on Monday with more news and information that you can use for the cannabis community. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.